of the Eternal.
Artasya.
Thing. Sambandha. Relationship. He. Indeed. Anicca. Temporary. Drishyate. Is seen. Rishu. In human society. Yavat. As long as. Yasya. Of whom? He. Indeed. Sambandha. Relationship. Mamatvam. Ownership. Tavat. That long. Eva. Indeed. He. Certainly. Translation. A few living entities are born in the human species, and others are born as animals. Although both are living entities, their relationships are impermanent. An animal may remain in the custody of a human being for some time, and then the same animal may be transferred to the possession of other human beings. As soon as the animal goes away, the former proprietor no longer has a sense of ownership. As long as the animal is in his possession, he certainly has an affinity for it. But as soon as the animal is sold, the affinity is lost. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Aside from the fact that the soul transmigrates from one body to another, even in this life, the relationships between living entities are impermanent, as exemplified in this verse. The son of Chichaketu was named Harsha Shoka, or jubilation and lamentation. The living entity is certainly eternal, but because he is covered by a temporary dress, his body, his eternity is not observed. Deinosmin yatha dehe kumaram yuvanam jada. The embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age. Thus, the bodily dress is impermanent. The living entity, however, is permanent. As an animal is transferred from one owner to another, the living entity who was the son of Chichaketu lived as his son for some time, but as soon as he was transferred to another body, the affectionate relationship was broken. As stated in the example given in the previous verse, when one has a commodity in his hands, he considers it his. But as soon as it is transferred, it becomes someone else's commodity. Then one no longer has a relationship with it. He has no affection for it, nor does he lament for it. So, nityasyar tasya sambandho yanityo drishyate nrishu yavadyasya hi sambandho mamatvam tavat eva hi. So, Omagana Timadanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So, the personality who's preaching here is Chitraketu's so called son. His name is Harsha Shoka. And this is a very interesting story because it illustrates the point I was making last night, how one needs to be under the, let's say, the jurisdiction or the influence of one of these four factors before they can really take up Krishna consciousness seriously. Remember the four factors Krishna says in the Gita: distress, looking for knowledge, inquisitive, or from looking for money, looking for artasha, looking for money or wealth or something like that. So what happened with Chitraketu was that he wasn't so serious about Krishna consciousness. In fact, his main objective, basically, he was a devotee, but his main objective was to enjoy life in this world as a devotee. Yeah, that's called sa-kama devotee. There's nishkama and sa-kama devotees. Nishkama means whose devotee's main objective is to please Krishna in this world. And sa-kama means whose main objective is to enjoy life in this world, but be a devotee. You know, we like Krishna, and we also like Bollywood movies at the same time. That's Sakama devotee. So generally, the demigods are considered like this, Sakama devotees, because they have some desire to fulfill, and they end up in trouble, like Indra. He runs after some other ladies, other than his wife, and so stories about that. Gautama Rishi's wife, Ahalya. These are Sakama devotees. So Chitraketu, he really wanted to enjoy family life. And in order to enjoy family life, he had to have a son. He was a king. And in order to have a son, he had to have a wife. In those days, they didn't have test tube babies. At least they weren't so prominent. So he got married. Then, much to his dismay, he discovered that his wife couldn't have any children. So then he said, well, no problem. Because in those days, polygamy was extant. That means was allowed, was prominent. It's interesting. The word in Sanskrit for co-wife is saputni. And if you analyze it in Sanskrit, it also means saputnya, means with one's enemy. That means that... That means the co-wives, you know, so that... Because they start fighting with each other after a while. They're not exactly happy, you know, best friends, you know. It's like if any of you think if your husband said, dear, there's someone I'd like to introduce you to. It's your next, your friend, you know, co-wife. Like that. Daddy. It would take a while to get adjusted. I was just watching a report about the Mormons. And the Mormons, originally, like, there were two people that founded the Mormon religion, Joseph Smith and Brigham Young. So he, both of them had, like, many wives. They had, like, 50 wives or something like that. And like 80 or 90 children. Pretty interesting, isn't it? Need a big house here in Sydney for something like that. So anyway, so they were interviewing the ladies who had accepted a co-wife, and they said it was really difficult and it's a continual struggle. So anyway, so having more than one wife means having people who are basically enemies of each other. And you see there's so many examples of that. So many problems. Like Kaikeyi created so many problems and with her relationship with Dasarath. And anyway, so with Chitraketu, he took another wife, thought he could have a kid. Didn't work, took another wife. I don't know if he did it all one by one. You know, maybe he took a whole bunch at once. But he ended up somehow or other with 10 million of them. What's the population of Sydney? 4 million, so 4 million something. So more than twice the population of Sydney. I guess he'd have to have like mass transit to go between the different homes or something. Can you imagine 10 million? It's unbelievable. I mean, Sydney's, there's a problem with housing here and so many things. What would you do with 10 million? So anyway, so it still didn't work. You know, after a while, when you keep trying something, you should realize that Krishna doesn't want it. The people just don't have that common sense. You know, they keep... What is it? I think it was Einstein who said, he defined insanity as to keep doing the same thing and think you're going to have a different result. Did you ever hear that quote before? Yeah, he said, insanity means to keep doing the same thing and think you're going to get a different result. So he kept doing the same thing. And he kept getting the same result. Finally, this sage. And he was real attached to the world. You know, obviously, you know, that's attachment. Because he was thinking, I have to have a son, I have to have a son, I have to have a son. So, and Krishna was saying, no, you can't. No, you can't. No, you can't. It's not in the stars. So what happened is Angira came along. Angira, a rishi. And he said, Angira, I'm in distress because I can't have a son. And Angira blessed him to have a son. He said, your son is going to be known as Harsha Shoka. That means happiness and lamentation. And he was thinking, well, that's normal for a kid. You know, sometimes the kid's crying, keeps you up all night long. that's a little lamentation. Sometimes he does real cute things, so that's happiness. Like any of you who have children, it's not, you know, it's mixed. It's not that all the time. You know, sometimes they're getting sick and they put you in anxiety, you got to run to the hospital. That's lamentation. So he was thinking like that. Then what happened is that the 9,999,999 wives, the ones that weren't the actual mother, I believe her name was Krichya Jyoti, if I remember correctly. So they got envious, you know, because this one wife was getting all the attention. That's another problem with polygamy, is you got to make sure you give everybody equal attention, or else you got trouble on your hands. Even with children, it's like that too. When you have a second child, sometimes the first child gets really upset. I can see that with Gandharvika's kids. I mean, he was just basically, I mean, I could see in his face, you know, he wasn't happy that he had a sister like that, you know. So the 9,999,999 decided to poison this kid. And so they gave him this poison. And the kid died. And Chitraketu was lamenting, "Oh, my son, oh, my son, oh, my son, oh, my son." And along comes Nardamuni. Nardamuni was able to... in the beginning, Nardamuni didn't come with Angira, because Nardamuni generally preaches renunciation. So Nardamuni this time came with Angira, and he began to preach to him, and then also he brought back this child to life for a little while. And the child began to preach to his parents, which is quite interesting, and this is what you're finding here. So the point being is that this is really what woke up Chitraketu spiritually. This whole, let's say, pastime, or this whole exchange with the child and losing the child and lamenting and everything, it really was the wake-up call. So to come to Krishna consciousness, we really need a wake-up call. Like to come seriously to Krishna consciousness, not just that Krishna consciousness is some family tradition or something like that. It has to be a wake-up call. Hey, this material world has problems to it. Basically, that's what we have to come to the conclusion. There are many psychologists, not nowadays, of course, psychologists and psychiatrists nowadays, especially psychiatrists, just prescribe drugs. They're not interested in people. But I was reading that article that psychiatrists don't talk to people anymore. They just provide drugs. So there were many psychologists years ago who were Christians, and they talked about how schizophrenia. You ever heard of schizophrenia before? How schizophrenia was an attempt of the person to really adapt to the nature of this material world. And those who were successful at it became spiritualists. And those who were unsuccessful, they just remained a little touched in the head. But they had to go to a mental institution. So you see that in the case of many people who take up spiritual life, they go through some really intense soul-searching, either soul-searching or intense, even almost like a mental breakdown. You know, hey, this world has no meaning to it. I mean, I didn't have that specifically in my life, a complete mental breakdown, but there were circumstances that really brought me to Krishna consciousness. I mean, one of them was that I had the realization that there was, basically, there's no happiness in following my parents' path, which was just, you know, making money and just living a life. And what's the purpose? I would ask my mother, the purpose is so you can also have children and make money and they can have children and you can have grandchildren. I said, so what's the use of such a thing? So I was basically looking for some higher truth, higher understanding. Of course, it, being an illusion, I thought that I could find some higher understanding by going to Europe. You know, because in America, you think, well, Americans have no culture, so you got to go to Europe, like France and things like that, where there's some culture. Actually, there's Very little culture there. It's all the same thing. So I went there and I was disappointed. I found eating, sleeping, mating, defending also going on in Europe, especially France. In fact, I found they didn't even take regular baths in France. Yeah, I stayed at a hotel and I asked where the shower was. They had a toilet in the room, but I asked where the shower was and they said, oh, downstairs in the basement. They went down to the basement, turned it on. It was a bath, big, one of these big old European bathtubs. And out comes water with that had, you know, the basically rusty water. And I see it, could see it hadn't been used in months. Because France is where perfume came from, because it was, they needed it. Not having used the bath for about 6 months a year. So, something like the Eskimos, you know, they remain in there. You understand, it's so cold out they can't take off their clothes for 6 months. So, anyway, so I had this realization. I was in the town of Marseille. Marseille is in southern France. I don't know if you ever heard of that town before. I was in Marseille. It's a very young man. I was like, I don't know how old, 18, 19, 20s, whatever it is, before any of you were born. And then I had this realization, hey, you know, can't find out anything about life here. There has to be something. So it was like it was almost like a crisis. You know, it wasn't like mental illness, but it was a crisis, you know. Just, there's no meaning to this life. And so based on that crisis, I really took up Krishna consciousness because this was a type of distress, you know, a need for meaning. That's also distress for those who are more intelligent, that they need some meaning in life. And you'll find many people actually go crazy because there's no meaning in life other than spiritual life. And when they don't have spiritual life, they can't discover a meaning. So they just, like, end up in a mental institution. So fortunately, I had Prabhupada, so I didn't end up in a mental institution. So that was really like an impetus, that sort of like a, almost like a breakdown. You understand like what I'm talking about? Almost like a breakdown that, you know, what's life all about? There's no meaning. I mean, otherwise, I think I would have just sat and contemplated on my navel for the rest of my life, like some yogi or some impersonalist. You know, I was doing so many things, like meditating on the candle. I would read books about yoga, how you have to think of nothing. You know, meditate on nothing, on the nothing. You know, and I tried to meditate on nothing, tried to meditate on candles. So it didn't work. But basically, it was that like intense psychological state or emotional state that really impelled me to be Krishna conscious, and because of that, then, you know, I really became enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness. And of course, later on, you don't have that same psychological dynamic occurring, so you have to function on the platform of intelligence. But the platform of intelligence usually doesn't bring one to Krishna consciousness. It keeps one in Krishna consciousness, which is really important. So Chitraketu here had this big shock where his kid died and the kid preached him, and then he became very serious about Krishna consciousness. He basically, after that point, he became, as we'll read later on in this chapter, the following chapters, he became a preacher. He would travel on traveling Sankirtan. In an airplane, in a floating airplane all over the place. Of course, he did make a mistake later on and become a curse to become a demon. Made one mistake while he was preaching. He decided to be humorous with Lord Shiva. When Shiva was having Parvati on his lap and he was preaching to the sages, so he said, you know, what is it? What's going on here? And that really wasn't an offense because Lord Shiva and him were good friends. But still, he had that mistake. And then he was further put into the body of this demon, Rudrasura demon. And that was a further impetus for him to become Krishna conscious, which is interesting. So, therefore, we can conclude that Krishna does make these arrangements in sincere people's lives to sort of like pull the rug out from under them. You understand what I mean? Pulling the rug out from under them? Like if you're standing and someone goes, poof, and you fall flat on your face. You definitely have some realizations that the person who pulled the rug out wasn't your friend. In the same way, Krishna uses this rug-pulling technique to help us understand that this material world is not really a place for us. And he does this in various ways. I mean, not so dramatic all the time, like children dying and being brought back to life, but other ways, like we were discussing this yesterday, that sometimes the, our best friends, they'll turn against us, or our brothers or sisters or family members will actually, which is even in one sense more intense than having someone die, is to have someone you really are concerned or care for, whatever the relationship is, become or think that you're the enemy and attack you. I mean, that's really intense. And I think we've all experienced that too, how good friends or family members or whatever, all of a sudden, they don't care for us anymore, or they hate us. And that's so intense. And so we can take it in two ways. One is we just get depressed. Or we can take it as an impetus to become Krishna conscious, to take shelter of Krishna's holy names. When I personally had that happen, I just increased my japa. I just go for long walks, increase my japa, and chant more. And I see that Krishna's behind it. Because Krishna's behind everything. Krishna's behind this death of Harshashoka, too. It's all Krishna's arrangement. The whole material world has the purpose, especially for someone who is Krishna conscious and someone who Krishna is specifically taking interest in, it has the purpose to bring you back to Krishna. So we have to see that whatever happens, whether it's disease or someone turned against us or a natural calamity like they just had in Christchurch, you have to use that as a stepping stone to come closer to Krishna. That's the point. And Chitraketu certainly did that, and he is extremely successful in that regard. So any questions or comments? Because we have to end, because people have to work. Yeah.
Krishna consciousness has to be a wake-up.
Yeah.
For our kids, Krishna consciousness is more of like everyday thing.
It's everyday thing when they're born in and everything.
The outside world.
Yeah.
When they grow up, for them, that will be the wake-up call. So.
Yeah, or there's other things that we can do, too. But we should somehow or other help them understand the nature of this world in a very practical way. Because what I've seen in our movement is many of the Gurukulis not so serious about Krishna consciousness. You probably noticed that. And sometimes you may go to one of these Gurukuli melas, and there's things going on that would shock anybody, basically. Between the, you know, the Gurukuli, they say, well, we love Krishna. You get the standard statement, we love Krishna. And they're doing all these things at the same time. And certainly they love Krishna. We're not denying that. However, there must be a way to help people understand the nature of this material world without torturing them. And perhaps one of the, I mean, for example, let's take, for example, what the Mormons do. I was studying them. They actually send their children out for 2 years to do preaching activity. And then they come in contact with, I'm sure even here in Australia, you have Mormons that come from America. And they go door to door, you know, in pairs and knock on your door and say, can we talk to you? And they're very nice people, too. So, and they send them to all these third world countries, too, where they get a chance to, in Brazil, in the jungles, or PNG. I'm sure there's Mormons in PNG. And they get a chance to experience this world. So it's actually a good idea to let people experience, not in a way that's dangerous, of course, but to experience this world, perhaps taking, not hiding the facts of life, of death from the children, like taking them into hospitals, letting them see people, perhaps they were getting sick or dying. In the West, we have, death is mainly hidden from us here in the West. I mean, how many people have seen, well, even if you see a cremation, it's just they throw the body in the oven and then you don't see the body burning. Whereas in India, at least in the villages, you actually see the body on a funeral pyre, and it's really a wake-up call when you see like that. So there's certain things. I'm not saying that we have to do that, but there has to be some way whereby the person, the children, or the person we're trying to bring to Krishna consciousness is confronted with the realities of life. Not just in a philosophical way, but in a practical way. Somehow or the way they see, yes, this is what life is all about.
Does that mean if they go to school, that's...
No, I'm not, that may be the opposite effect, because, you know, when they go to school, they become so much addicted to sporting games, or especially now the media and everything like that, that they become more further removed from reality. So I've seen that, especially nowadays, people are on the computer so many hours a day, you know, the virtual reality, that they have an illusion within an illusion. So then they don't see the reality, even of violence. They get into all that. Most of the games are really violent games, you know, the video games. There's one, the most famous game is called Grand Theft Auto. I don't know if you ever heard of that game before. Anyone's heard of that video game before? That's a video game where you get to kill people and rape people and kill people. And it's just, you remove from the reality of the harshness of this world. Because in video games, someone gets knocked down, they just stand up again. It's not like that in the material world. Material world, you even slip. It's like this morning I got an email from one of my disciples. In India, she was walking on the street, she slipped, and now she's like disabled for a few months. So it's not like a video game or like some movie where someone... You see these movies sometimes, someone really takes a fall, gets thrown out of a building, falls three stories, and they just get up and walk away. Or they're having some punch, you know, they're punching each other. If you get punched in the face... You don't just get up and walk away. I mean, it's far more serious than that. So I think if one goes to the schools, at least the normal schools, one gets further removed from reality. But it's good for the parents to somehow or other introduce the child to the realities of this world. Somehow or other. If someone goes to Vrindavan or Govardhan and sees how poor people are there, and then you do some charitable activity or spiritual activity to help the people, you know, feeding the people, that also helps. It makes one more grateful for what one has. You know, one thing I see that many of our young people, they're not grateful for the Krishna consciousness that they were given by the parents. I'm not saying all like that. They're not thinking it's, you know, they're taking shelter of the Krishna. It's just something you're born in. It's just like, you know, hey, this is what I was born in. It's just like, it's not a shelter anymore. So, basically, there has to be wake-up call. There has to be something. In the Western world, they call that the dark night of the soul. I don't know if you've heard of that expression before. That one has some, like, crisis, and that really wakes one up. That's a standard Western theological statement. Anyone ever heard of that statement before? It's called the dark night of the soul, where you actually go through some, you know, really intense, even painful experience.
But that also happens to someone who's also Krishna conscious, and they get like a regular.
Yeah, we may have regular experiences like that.
What's that supposed to do?
That's good. That means Krishna loves you. That keeps you strong in Krishna consciousness. Krishna says, Yashaham anagrinami harishe tantanam shanai. For those who I especially favor, I keep doing those things too.
Like, say, Prabhupada, he had like ongoing.
It's mostly like emotional psychological stress that occurs because of things that happen in this world. I mean, let's say you get sick. That's a very distressing situation. So many things. Adiatmic, adibodhic, adidaivic. You know, miseries from what other living entities... The most painful thing is what other living entities do. It said, the Bhagavatam says the most painful thing is the harsh words of someone who is, you know, who you love, you know, who you're attached to like that. That's the most painful thing. Even more painful than getting stabbed or having a disease or something like that. Of course, it's not that we should be harsh with each other to help each other advance in Krishna consciousness. That's not a good proposal. However, these things will happen, and we should take them as an impetus to become more Krishna conscious. So I think everybody has to get to work. Yes. All right, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace and Prabhupada.